Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominique.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. I'm actually quite tired today because yesterday we had a whole day on my Series 3 again, didn't we?
We did. I'm just about warmed up.
It was
24 hours later.
It was not warm, was it? Considering we took it apart, what was it? Just over a month and a half ago, probably. Was the first session we did on it.
Yeah, it was back in September. We even had a barbecue, didn't we?
Early September, and it felt like actual summer, and now it's actual winter.
But it was actual summer until it actually rained. Do you remember?
Yeah, but the rain wasn't like cold, but now it is cold outside, and you feel that when you're lying on a gravel driveway. It was actually interesting. A lot of people said on the YouTube video, you're doing it on a gravel driveway, are you mad? It's like, well,
it's real
and it's quite fun. And so still recovering from that slightly. You can tell I don't do a physical job every day anymore because I am aching a little bit, but good progress. Got it running and driving.
Yeah, it's such an achievement. Are we going to tell a funny story about the overdrive?
Yeah, shall we?
I think we should, because it was hilarious.
People will see it on the video and it'll be,
you know, you need to watch it on the video, but
yeah, that video will be live on our YouTube channel in a couple of weeks. But we had a, do you ever do a job, right, and you spend a good amount of time and effort doing something properly, and then it just completely bites you in the backside and it is a total waste of time? If you did, that's what we came up against, wasn't it?
So we filmed the whole process, didn't we, yesterday morning, and I was, you know, when you get frozen to the bone, I was that yesterday. My heater in my 90 last night felt like it actually worked because everything was warmer than standing in your yard.
It's easy. You obviously being cameraman, there's times where you can't do anything. So you're stood around, you know, doing your answering emails, phone calls, things like that. Because this is a work thing. We've got to continue working in the background.
The world doesn't stop because we're building your Land Rover, that's what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. You're right. But Neil and I were, you know, beavering away, getting stuff done. We were always moving, so we probably kept a little bit warmer for longer, whereas you weren't quite doing that. But one of the big things we did was fit the overdrive.
Which I've never actually seen one fit, so I've learned something. I've learned not to do it.
Well, the one I had to fit was a fairy overdrive, which is sort of like the old school unit from back in the day, if you like. And they're a bit hit and miss secondhand. They can be good. They can be fine if they've had an easy life, which I was led to believe this one had, or they can be noisy and horrible and whatever. But the fact of the matter was, we spent a good few hours fitting this and documenting it for the magazine and for YouTube. And then we got the engine running, didn't we? Primed the oil system, put water in it, got it running.
All systems were go.
We were on a high. The sun was still up in the sky. We had enough light to finish off what we were doing, and I didn't have any drive in any gears.
Yeah, you let the clutch drop and nothing happened. You were like, hang on a minute, what's going on here?
We tried making sure the transfer box wasn't in neutral. We made sure we went underneath to see if a prop shaft was spinning and I hadn't, you know, somehow a drive shaft hadn't snapped when the Land Rover had been sat in the in the shed, but
you can't imagine any. You can't imagine what it could be, apart from that one item.
Exactly. So the fact was, it ran and drove perfectly before we fitted the overdrive. So it could only be that. And sure enough, we took it back off, and I compared the gear on the end of the overdrive to the gear that came out of my transfer box, which I believed up till this point was a totally standard Series 2A transfer box. And the gear that we removed was bigger in diameter, so the overdrive wasn't meshing with any of the other gears in the transfer box, hence no drive.
So you'll share those pictures, won't you, in the article?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And on YouTube, we'll see that.
Yes, yeah. I had to know for sure, so I dug the gear back out and we compared it to the end of the overdrive. And yeah, I think I haven't actually confirmed yet, but I'm pretty sure it's got an Ashcroft high ratio gear set in the box. And the overdrive only works with the original gears. So that was the problem.
Yeah, amazing, really.
But it was just so, from the high of getting it running to...
You let the clutch up, expecting it to start moving, and it didn't.
No.
Yeah.
It was, it was still a good day. But we took the overdrive back off. We put the cover plate back on the back of the transfer box. And sure enough, it was fine again. So I guess I'm not using that overdrive on that gearbox. Never mind. So this got me thinking, though. You need to buy a classic Land Rover.
Yeah, do you know, yeah.
Everyone
needs to own one.
Should have one. Because I heard a great phrase the other day, actually. When you've got, the phrase is, that horse doesn't eat any hay. When you've got a classic Land Rover, if it's tax and MOT exempt,
yeah,
and it costs as little to insure as a lot of them do.
Like £100 or something like
I think
that.
Mine's £118 for the year.
Cheapest chips.
On limited mileage. It doesn't cost you anything to own it. And a lot of them are also US compliant as well. So you can drive it into, which is ironic, I know, but you can drive into low emission zones and not pay a penny. You can.
What gets me, right? So last night when you fired up your V8 and it drove itself or reversed into your workshop.
Yeah.
How on earth can that be US?
Because it's historic, isn't it? It was still on choke when we ran it, which is why it smelled so fuel.
I could smell that.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. But I get it. I like that saying.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then again, your 90, the project one, will be. It's not eating any hay at the moment because it's not been on the road for ages.
All right. Right. So anyone that's listened to this podcast for the very first time, go back and listen to every podcast we've recorded up till now, and you'll see that basically Martin gets that dig in about my unfinished project every time.
But
it'll
be back on the road. It'll be exempt as well, won't it?
It should be.
What reg is it?
It's a 90. Well, it'll be exempt in 2025.
Oh, so next year.
Next year it'll be 40 years old.
Oh, happy days. Yeah, there you go then. Mm. So, yeah, any Land Rover that's 40 years or older, it's a dream to own. And the other thing about Land Rovers, older Land Rovers, is they seem to respond a lot better to sitting around than a lot of other older, like classic cars. I've got a friend who's got a series 88-inch 2A truck cab. It's a really cool thing. It's on 900 by 16 tyres. They're like 101 size tyres, which are really chunky. But it sits at the back of his shed for like months, even years at a time. And he'll get it out once when he's got time for a classic car show or whatever. He'll check it over visually, but it always starts. Although, admittedly, it has got TDI in it.
Well, that's why.
Yeah, they're loyal.
So a perfect mix, really.
I think so.
How does that pull those tyres then? 900?
It's got enough.
Has it?
Yeah. It's got enough grunt. It's still got the turbo on it. It's still intercooled. So it's all right. Oh, yeah. And he doesn't have a high ratio gear set in his transfer box, so he's got loads of low down.
Oh, right, yeah. I was thinking if he's got like a Discovery transfer box like I will have.
Oh, no.
900.
Because this is a series. It's much lower geared anyway.
Of course.
Than a Defender. It's... There's so much you can do with them as well. Because we said about this the other day, didn't we? The Land Rover scene now is so different to how it... Like, you don't have to go... Although I think it's brilliant and we should. You don't have to go trialing. You don't have to go and do a pay and play. You don't even have to go green laning if you want to.
It's all coffee and cake meetups.
There's loads of social events you can go to, isn't there? I'm part of the Series 1, 2 and 3 group. And they're always meeting up. They do pub events. They go out and have meetups. There's like I can't remember. It's Triplow Daffodil Weekend they do every year. And it's like a classic car event, but also loads of other stuff going on. They do that. You're never ever short of something to do, and it's all because of that common denominator of an old Land Rover.
I've noticed some of the prices have settled. They are settling, aren't they?
Yeah, they've definitely softened in the last year, I would say. They are actually becoming sensible again, which is nice. Because as with any vehicle, you know, the higher the prices get and the more they hold that value, the less likely you are to go out and actually use them. So they're coming into a sensible price bracket, and people will go out and, you know, have fun with them rather than worrying about them and coating them in cotton wool and putting them away.
Which I think is a shame.
Yeah, it's... I always smile to myself when you go to an event or a show. You see it mostly at shows, and all these, what you wouldn't even really consider as unusably old Land Rovers turn up on trailers, and you think,
yeah,
why?
Yeah.
Half the adventure is driving it there.
I think so.
Yeah. Even after, like, a couple of years ago when I took the Series 3 to Malvern, you know, before I did really any work to it, and you drove it around the car park and declared it the worst series you'd ever driven.
Basically, yeah. It was. I'm not lying when I say it was probably the worst series I've ever driven.
Yeah, I can't disagree.
And I don't mean to sound horrible when I say that.
It had horrible remould tyres on it and locked up leaf springs, and I'll admit it wasn't very nice. But I still drove it there, and it was good fun. It makes it an adventure, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I think. But yeah, it's, you know, each to their own. But to me, if you're going to own an old Land Rover, do some road trips in it. Do have some adventures. Mm. Go out and enjoy it. Because there's, you know, people, even with, like I say, much more valuable and more valuable and like vehicles with the rarity factor. If you don't go out and use them and enjoy them, no one's going to care, unless you're planning to sell it. No one's going to, you know, care that it's been enjoyed. I don't know. I can't get my head around it, but just go out and use your Land Rover. What's the worst that can happen?
And then tell us about it. So if you've got one in the shed, you haven't used it for a while, and this podcast makes you use it, send us an email.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Go out and do what you need.
We've had some emails, haven't we?
We have, yes, indeed. I'm just flicking through to get to them. The first one is from Mike Silito, who says, "Hello, Martin and Steve. I enjoy listening to your podcast, and I see you've been asking for listeners to send in their questions. We certainly have." He says, "In the winter issue of Land Rover Monthly, still on sale if you want to grab it, a reader's raised the problem he's encountered with his Discovery 5. While that's about repairs, it's obvious from lots of reliability surveys that Land Rover has a problem with reliability and has done for many years." Yeah.
Unfortunately, getting away from that.
Yeah, can't really disagree with
that. Yeah.
"I know JLR expend a lot of effort into technological advancements, but I wonder if they spent as much effort investigating why their cars seem to get such poor reliability ratings. The ratings must have a cost impact on the company and their dealers. Surely they could put an investigative team onto the issue unless they are in denial that a problem exists." Well, I don't think they're in denial that a problem exists. I think lots of Land Rovers at dealerships that are waiting on parts would put paid to that.
We spoke about this the other day, didn't we, off the podcast. And there's so many people coming in at the other end of buying them. There'd only be a problem for them if people stopped buying the product.
Yeah, you're right.
But they still keep piling through the dealerships and buying the product.
Absolutely.
Look at the profits.
I know.
Look, you know, and you think they're doing something right. There's a lot of money in the UK.
When I worked at the dealer, it was a case of no one walked into a Land Rover dealership and was thinking about buying a Toyota or a Honda.
They're brand loyal.
They literally walk into a Land Rover dealership. They might not know what model or what vehicle specifically they want, but they know they want a Land Rover, and that will never stop. I don't think that will ever end.
No, they just tick the options.
And actually, when the Evoque came out and Land Rover were quite vocal about the fact that they wanted to get people out of things like BMWs and Audis on company car schemes and into Evoques, it flipping worked.
Yeah. They've done something right. So it's only when fewer people are coming in at the other end. On the flip side, can we talk about Jaguar?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Can we talk about it's been well documented.
Every other
more hits to their website than they've ever had in the company history.
And what do you think they were set out to do?
Well,
exactly that.
So some companies prefer negative reaction because it's still a reaction. It's still got somebody on their website talking about their brand. So more people have spoken about Jaguar in the last 7 days than probably in the company's history.
Exactly. And I must admit, I was one of the people who watched the teaser video and saw the changing in their branding. And I sort of squinted a bit and thought, what on earth are they doing? But I'm never going to buy a Jaguar. Most of the people who are completely up in arms about this rebrand and about, you know, kicking off about, what does this video mean? It's totally unrelated to cars. They're not going to buy Jaguars either. The sort of people who want to buy a Jaguar now, a new vehicle, have a decent job, earn decent money. They're maybe aware of Jaguar, but aren't really interested in anything they have produced. And now they might be, hang on, Jaguar exists again. That's in their head. And when they see the vehicles released, they're probably going to act on it.
I think you're right. Do you know what? So back in the days of like company cars, you know, when Ford Cortinas, you could see the the position somebody was at.
Yes.
If they had like, Cortinas weren't my generation.
Like an LS or a GS.
Yes. So they might have a Cortina, but they might be like middle management.
Right.
And then they'd be like Ford Mondeo man.
Mm-hmm.
But then the people that aspire to own a Ford Mondeo or have a company car no longer was that status symbol. So if you think like BMW and Mercedes and Audi took those top spots.
Yeah.
And to a certain degree, Land Rover did.
Yeah.
With Evoques and Velars.
When they came around to offering those things.
Yeah. So I think Jaguar will fall into that. A bit like the Tesla thing. Everyone's gone Tesla mad, haven't they? There's Teslas everywhere. Doesn't mean they're a good-looking car, because I think they're an awful-looking car. But Jaguar will, like you say, they'll probably make more money. And it's about profitability at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Not nostalgia.
And that's something, when you look back, that Jaguar haven't really done that well. They've always been in the shadow, ever since it became Jaguar Land Rover. They've always been in the shadow of Land Rover a bit, haven't they? As far as selling units goes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they've got the F-Pace and the I-Pace and the E-Pace.
Yeah.
Versus Velar and Range Rover Sport.
Yeah,
you think...
I don't know, I just...
Would you ever even look at the Jaguar, or would you only ever look at the Land Rover?
We're looking at it from people who love Land Rovers, from a people who love Land Rovers perspective.
You only need to look at the sales numbers of the Jaguar versus the Land Rover to see where people are voting.
Yeah, but they're potentially a slightly different demographic. I don't know, I really don't know. All I do know is Jaguar will have no doubt paid a marketing agency a lot of money to make that video, and in fairness to them, yes, it made people who were diehard car fans' heads explode and then rush over to their preferred social media platform and shout about it, but actually they've probably fulfilled their brief and then some.
So we haven't got long. I'm just trying to think. So by the time this podcast is out, we may have actually seen the new Jaguar, because it unveils next month.
Oh, is it?
Early images of the new car. So maybe we should reserve judgment.
Yeah. However, we are getting off-piste a bit.
We are.
So
silly enough, we could shoehorn Jaguar into the conversation.
I did follow a really, really nice F-Type here on the way to work, actually. It was a limited edition. F300 or something, you're aware?
Yeah.
Really smart. Anyway, Mike goes on to say, I'm fortunate in having a 2011 Freelander 2 Legend and 2010 Defender 90, both of which have been very reliable. I've occasionally thought about upgrading the Freelander 2 for a Discovery Sport, but I'm put off by press reports. I'm sort of in the same boat, but I'm going to hang on to mine. Having said that, I know that Ed Evans said in a recent podcast that the later Ingenium engines in the Discovery Sport are more reliable. I believe, 2019 or 2020 on, they changed some things and made them less blowy-uppy, which is... But thanks for your email, Mike. I echo Steve's thoughts on this, really. I don't think, much as it pains me to say it, and I wish it was all sweetness and light and rainbows, I don't think Land Rover really bothered about their reliability ratings as long as they keep selling cars.
And they are.
And
there's enough people that are buying them with indeed a warranty that don't care.
Yeah.
It's only like the likes of us as enthusiasts, trying to latch on to the second or third owner of said car.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at if we went out now with, I don't know, £15,000 to go and buy a Land Rover product, we would end up buying a load of products.
I said...
buy hassle, wouldn't we?
It was funny when the new Defender first came out, and I was obviously quite lucky to get a good look around one before they were sort of everywhere. And I remember thinking to myself, this is really cool. This is so capable. It's got so much great stuff in it. I can't wait to buy one when I can afford one in 20 years. And that's not what Land Rover are going for. They want to keep selling new cars.
They don't want to sell cars to you.
No, they don't.
No.
No.
They don't like us.
No, it's not that they don't like us. It's...
We're not
spending money with them, so why are they going to pander to...
No.
Do you know what I mean? Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
Stuart Fisher has emailed in. He says, hi, gents. I spent a happy drive listening to your latest episode of the podcast when you were discussing your dream garage, and it made me gratefully reflect on mine. You asked us to share, so I thought I would. I don't see Stuart might be Land Rover's. He might be the apple of their eye. He daily drives a 2021 Discovery, which he begrudgingly had to sell his 2013 Discovery 4 to get. It was a great truck, and I did a lot of towing with it through multiple hard winters up here in Scotland and loved it to bits. It was always a dream car since they came out, but sadly the bills just got too much and it had to go, despite the argument of we've done it all now. You know, like when you paint the Forth Road Bridge and then by the time you finish the whole thing, you have to start again.
Pretty much.
That's basically discovery ownership, I think, for most people. He's pretty pleased with the Disco 5 so far. Good to hear. He says, time will tell. But he recently caught the I'll buy it and fix it up bug by buying a rotten old Fordson tractor and renovating it last year. We've seen the pictures of this. It looks very cool.
It does look cool. Who doesn't like a Fordson tractor?
Who doesn't like old tractors and old Land Rovers go together like
they do.
Fish and chips? Yeah. What a treat. And I thought I wanted to apply the same approach to Land Rovers, so I bought a Series 3 88-inch petrol off Marketplace fairly cheaply. Beautiful.
Good one to have.
Came with a truck cab and a full hardtop. I want to use it as a long-term project car and a toy. See, this is exactly what I was just saying about buying a classic Land Rover. Yeah. It's the way forward.
Doesn't owe you anything in the end.
Exactly.
Cheap fun.
Thinking of going full soft top, but renovating the other cab and hard top so they are viable options for the vehicle. It's always nice to have choices. If you've got space to house everything, I often thought it would be nice to have like a hard top and a full length soft top for my 109.
It would. Yeah. Brilliant.
6 months
with one and 6 months with another.
Yeah. He says, it's actually not bad. It's got first gear. It slips out of first gear, but otherwise it drives great. Just needs a tidy up.
Mind you, he lives in Scotland, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's probably got 11 months of hardtop and 1 month of...
Maybe, yeah. God, he's really got project fever. He says he also picked up a 2004 TD5 110 County, which he's going to sell to fund the Series 3. Ran it as a daily for 3 months. And he's... God, he's been a busy boy, as Stuart... I've just revamped my farm workshop with a two-post lift, so now I've got space and time over winter. Just the money missing. I know how you feel, Stuart.
Time and money, two of the biggest reasons why...
The project triangle, isn't it? The project triangle.
Time, I love triangle.
Time, space, and money.
Yeah.
You never have all three.
You don't.
In my case, you quite rarely have two, but... He says, thanks for the great podcast. Keep them coming. I'm an online reader and YouTube channel subscriber. So thanks for making the world of Land Rover ownership and maintenance feel accessible to the everyman. Well, thank you for that, Stuart.
That's nice.
Great. And not only that, the cherry on the top. He says, sandwich first, then crisps. My man.
Well, he was right about most things until the very end. So, yeah, fair enough.
Good stuff. Well, yeah, I mean, you can't disagree with any of that. And that's the sort of... email that we love to get. So if you've got any feedback, if you've got any thoughts about anything, if you want us to discuss something specific on the podcast, send us an email.
We will definitely
editorial@lrm.co.uk. drop us a line. There's another one. Daniel Perry gets in touch. He says, I used to have 10 Land Rovers. That's quite a lot to have at once.
You know, that's too many.
As you said...
Is there such thing as too many?
Yes, 10 is
too many. 10 is too many.
He says, as you said, it spreads you far too thin. That's what I found, is you get stressed out because not only are you having to pay for parts for all these vehicles, your time, you can't just focus on one or two. You've just got to try and keep them all at a level, and that level will never be as high as you might want.
Yeah, and the thing for 10 Land Rovers is 10 batteries and 10 like fuel tanks getting stale.
10 sets of tyres.
Yeah, but you've got to... wear them all out. I mean, you've got to do a lot of miles in 10 different vehicles.
Yeah.
For me, battery and fuel would be the two reasons to stop you. This keeping things lubricated and moving.
Yeah, definitely.
And space.
Yeah, space is a biggie, isn't it? He goes on to say he's now got a core of 4, which is a lot more manageable, I think.
Yeah, still probably too many for me, personally.
Okay. He's got a 1985-90, which is on a custom Mayer chassis with air suspension, which sounds really cool. He says it's on air suspension to get it in a garage at home because it's got a full safety devices roll cage. It's TD5 converted with Ashcroft boxes. It's got Discovery 2 climate control and steering column. That sounds...
It's 1985, basically, it's like a 1985 identity.
He's updated it heavily.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Drop us some pictures of that, please. I'd love to see that, Daniel. He's got... so he's now daily driving that, and he's selling his P38, which was his daily driver, diesel P38.
Okay. TD5 will be quicker.
It will definitely be quicker, yeah. Despite having one fewer cylinder, it does have a lot more power.
Mm.
He says, the other two, once the P38 is gone, there's a soft dash Range Rover Classic. Beautiful. Alistair Cusick, if you're listening, I know he'll be keen on the soft dash. Fellow enthusiast. Oh, hang on, he hasn't left that one alone either. That's on a Discovery 2 TD5 chassis and running gear, which is still a project. God. He sounds like he's got some...
He knows what he's doing.
He's got some right stuff on the go, hasn't he? And finally, he's got a launch day registered Discovery 1 200 TDI, which is bog standard and in need of restoring, which he'll get round to when he's finished the Range Rover. Love the podcast, Daniel. And if you want to check out Daniel's YouTube channel, it's Drizz, D-R-I-Z-Z, Developments. I will be having a look at that because that sounds weird.
I will, yeah. You forward that to me.
I will, yeah. So, 4. Yeah, I think 4's okay, but it'll be 3 once his P38's gone.
Yeah, 3 to 4.
I think 3. 3 is the sweet spot for me. But
you've got room for one more.
You may well disagree. If you do, if you think more's better, do you ever see, like, there's Instagram accounts like Land Rover Heaven and things like that, and it's literally people with farms just full of series Land Rovers?
You have seen that, yes.
I don't know what to make of it. I think fair play, because that's dedication, but also, are you ever actually going to do anything with all of them?
The problem with that is you're almost preventing other enthusiasts getting hold of them for your own...
If
you've got like a field full of them, you're never realistically going to do them. Well, lots of these hoarders, they are hoarders.
Yeah.
Think they're going to get round to it, and they don't.
I don't know what I think they're a business. If they do sell them as projects, then fine. If you're one of those people that has genuinely interested and enthusiastic people come to you and say, oh, you know, I'm really after something, would you sell that? And you say, no, I'm going to do it up. And you've got 40 of them sat there. Guess what? You're probably not going to get to it.
No. But there's lots of people in all, like in the world of tractors and...
Oh, everything.
Fire machinery and old commercial vehicles. Motorcycle, everyone's got this quirk. A lot of people got this quirk where they just hold on to stuff.
It can be incredibly frustrating, especially when you see something that's quite special and you think that really does need to be saved. And
it's deteriorating, sitting underneath a tree or something.
And the owner is not interested and they say, no, I'm going to do it one day. When in fact, they won't do it one day. They will, without being too morbid, they will die. Their kids will get hold of it and then they will probably weigh it in because they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And on that uplifting note, here's a word from our sponsor.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
So you were on the verge of doing a buy this afternoon, weren't you?
I was, but my wallet sort of tightened up.
Has it? It's tightened up.
Yeah.
And it creaks quite loudly when you open it.
Yeah.
Tightened up even more.
Yeah, because, right, so all of a sudden we've got to this stage in the UK where the windscreen on my Defender is misted up.
Yeah.
And my screen is past its sell-by date anyway, as is the windscreen seal.
You've got milky corners, haven't you?
Milky corners.
Milky corner syndrome.
That's basically water, isn't it? It gets between the layers.
The lamination, it goes all white.
So I've got milky corners. So ideally, and the actual windscreen seal of mine is like well past its sell-by date.
Cracking the corners.
Cracked in the corners.
Yeah.
It's brittle. And I have an OEM seal ready and waiting to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I need a new screen.
Right.
But I had a look at the price of heated screens versus
traditional.
A non-heated screen I can pick up on from most of the sellers on Tinternet for about £55.
Right.
The heated screen is, I think, nearly £200. Plus, you need the wiring kit.
Yeah.
It's over £400 to put a heated screen in the Defender versus £55
I guess it's one of those where...
How much will I want it?
Yeah. And also, see, I've been down this road. I've never actually upgraded my own defenders, any of my defenders, to a heated screen, but I've often thought about it. If you have a heated screen fitted, this is such a pessimistic way of looking at it. If you have a heated screen fitted and you do all the wiring and you make it all lovely, lovely, and then you get a stone in it.
Yeah.
You've either got a claim on your insurance or you've got to pay another 200 quid or whatever it is for another heated screen.
Yeah.
Whereas 50 quid bit of flat glass with the corners rounded off, cheap.
I am leaning towards a non-heated screen.
If you're setting out to completely sort your Land Rover out for winter, you can't ignore the fact that a heated screen is a fantastic idea. You can't get around
that. No, you can buy the wiring kit already made.
Yeah.
Almost looks to me fairly plug and play.
They're not bad. Can be a little bit fiddly. I've fitted one or two, but that's the other thing, of course, is once your wiring's there, yes, if you have to replace the screen, it's expensive and it costs money, but you'll probably forget the money more quickly when you can get in your Land Rover, stab the button, and you can see almost instantly.
Yeah.
Do I feel like peer pressure is getting to you and you're going to buy one?
It's one of those things, because I've been using my Land Rover every day this week.
Yeah.
So far. I say it's only Tuesday, but I used it all last week as well. And it is cold and it's a bit fresh and the screen doesn't clear that quickly.
Yeah.
We touched on this last week when we were talking about winter driving. I haven't tried the shaving foam trick.
Oh, you're supposed to report back. Do it tonight. Get the Gillette out and wipe it all over your screen.
I haven't got any. Well, I mean, a beard. So, true Land Rover person has beards.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Interesting take.
Don't know why. Land Rover people do have beards.
Grab some from the shop on the way home and give it a go, because I'm intrigued. I don't need it because my Freeland's got a heated screen and my Series 3 still in bits. So
your Series 3 is almost ready.
Yeah, it's not far off. Keep saying that every week. Oh, it's not far off. But you don't realise quite how much there is to do until you...
I did notice there was a fair bit to do. But what I did, it's the first time I've seen it since it was back together.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Because I only saw it when it was in dismantling stage.
Yeah, we did
the first two days
on the trot, didn't we? We were taking it to bits. And we did get the new chassis rolling by the end of the second day with the engine and gearbox in.
You did, but I haven't seen it because you did a session when I was on holiday.
Yeah.
You probably got more done when I wasn't there.
It was... What you do find is it's all well and good ripping big bits off, and that is the best way to do it. But it's the minutiae, if you like, of... which bolts are too corroded to reuse. You've then got to find the correct bolts to replace them with. Where does this go? Even when you label stuff up, your brain, if you leave weeks between doing stuff, there's a lot more to it. Do you know what I mean? Putting it back together.
Yeah, so I've got no hope with like a 3-year gap.
That will be quite a process, but it will be fine. You will get it done.
Yeah.
It's just about, yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm on the home run.
Oh, you are definitely on the home run.
It's mostly putting the floors in and, tidying up a little bit of wiring and putting the cab on when I can take it outside, things like that. But yeah, yours will be all right though. You'll get it done. You won't be one of those people. You'll have people knocking on your door going, "Heard defender out the back there. Are you ever going to do anything with it?" Well, go away. I'm going to do it up.
No, mate. The tree grows through the middle of it or something. Right?
That's it, yeah.
No, we'll get it done.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good. But, yeah.
That's why I don't want to get sidetracked by buying a Series 3 or something like that.
Yeah, you're probably the wrong person to tell to buy another Land Rover.
My wife would be the wrong person to tell to buy another Land Rover, because she'd be like, hang on a minute.
What are you doing with that one?
Yeah.
Have you, I'll tell you what else we need to do, is in February, I'm off on the, as I said, Series 1, 2 and 3 Club are doing like a winter camp out. You should bring your camping trailer and see how it does in the cold.
But that means I'd have to sleep in the cold.
Yeah, that's part of the fun of a winter camp out.
But I don't have a Series, come there.
It doesn't matter, you'd be honorary guest.
Oh, would I?
You can't, well, put it behind my Series 3, that's got a NATO hitch.
Oh, all right then.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's only up the road from here.
Yeah, it's not far at all. But
I'll bring the beers in.
All right, yeah, cool. But I'm keen for a bit of winter camping. I really enjoyed it last year, and it was like properly frosty in the morning as well, and I was in my cot tent, which is pretty good.
Are you going to change your setup for next year?
My camping set.
You were talking about this at the Billing Land Rover show, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, and I don't know. What I really should do is put a roof rack on the Freelander too. In fact, I've seen by the time this podcast goes out, I expect it will be over, but Flatdog have got their Black Friday sale on their roof racks, and I'm like, ooh,
somewhere
close. I think it's still about 600 quid, but they're doing £75 off, I think, on all their racks products. But I really do want to try a roof tent out. I know I keep on about it, but I do want to do it. It's just getting round to...
Because it's not for me, the novelty of being in a roof tent hasn't worn off.
Has it not?
No, I really enjoy it, I must admit. It's a talking point to the campsites and camping places I've been. People approach me all the time.
Right.
Definitely draws an attention.
Yeah, I get it.
So if you want to go to a campsite and go under the radar and not be noticed, don't have a roof tent.
I bet as well. Has yours got built-in mattress?
No, it's just that it's... No, you can pull the mattress out.
Right.
It's got like a waterproof cover on it, and then you put like a sheet over the top of that.
Because a lot of them, especially the hard shell tents, which is probably what I would go for, have a built-in mattress, don't they? And I guess that's the closest thing you're going to get to sleeping in a normal bed, but in a tent.
So my... Yeah, I have to admit, so my rooftop tent is a front runner.
Yeah, soft shell, isn't it?
Soft shell.
Yeah.
And it's the only one front runner make.
Oh, is
it? To the same design.
Right.
For years, because it works. And they've upgraded, since then, they have upgraded certain aspects, and one of them is the mattress.
Right.
Because it's quite thin now. Well, not thin now. It was designed that thin. So when you sleep on it, it's a little... I've slept on more comfortable.
Okay.
I've tried more comfortable ones.
Yeah. See,
they have upgraded it since. You can buy a thick... You can't even buy it. You buy the new tent now. It comes with a better mattress.
Yeah, because the idea behind you doing your camping trailer, which was actually one of the first things we spoke about on the first episode.
Yeah,
of the
book, it was too.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was the fact that you found that a lot more suitable for that particular tent, because A, you've got the awning and everything on that tent, and it does take a little bit of time to set up and put down.
Yeah.
And you need to then be able to use the Land Rover to drive places and leave that set up, which to me does make perfect sense. But with a hard shell tent, the speed at which you can get the lid up and down and set everything up and pack it away.
Oh, yeah, like seconds.
That, to me, is a much better idea to have on top of a car. And
oh, definitely.
Do you see what I mean?
Like, definitely. The only problem, so now we've got onto talking about camping here, really, but with the hard shell tents, they weigh a lot more. So my tent's only 45 kilos.
Is it?
Yeah, they're really light. Really light. But you'll be probably looking at almost double that for a hard shell. You're probably talking 70, 80 kilos.
Yeah, I think
that
most of them are around that.
But that's quite a lot of weight up top.
Yeah, true. I guess, well, as with having lots of different body styles for your series Land Rover, it depends whether you've got space to take it off and store it or you're not using it.
One of the downsides, there's always camping. We did an article, didn't we? One of the issues of the magazine, camping and compromise.
Yeah.
There's always a compromise. So yes, I have a camping trailer on my driveway now. In fact, I looked in it the other day just to see if it was watertight, because we've had some biblical rain.
Yes.
And it is completely watertight in there.
Perfect.
So I'm well chuffed.
Good.
Obviously, waterproof rivets and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's really, really good. But the trouble is, it's taking up space of a car.
Yeah, because when you look at a Penman or a Sankey, they don't look particularly long. But by the time you take into account the drawbar, they're not short, are they?
I reckon that takes up the same amount of space as short wheelbase Land Rover.
Yeah.
So that's a parking space I've kind of lost.
Yeah.
Can't pack it all the way. There's nowhere to take it.
Mm.
There's always a compromise, but I do enjoy the camping trailer. There's still development work to be done.
Yeah.
There's always to do more work to it.
Well, that's always the case, isn't it? You always find more stuff to do. You need to paint it, really, don't you?
Yeah.
But
probably a springtime job.
Yeah, getting back to your original question, am I going to upgrade my camping setup for next year? Yes, I just don't know how yet. In truth, I can't fault that cot tent, and I've had that years.
I want to ratchet strap you in it one night.
Thanks.
So when you wake up and you can't get out, just be good. I think it'll be hilarious.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the sort of thing you just wear a ratchet strap, and it's like...
That sounds highly... Sounds like something that would happen at Billing, doesn't it?
It does. When they put you down the river or something.
Yeah. No, literally.
Very dangerous.
Yeah, don't do that,
yeah,
kids.
Yeah. do not do this at home.
I've had that thinking about it nearly 10 years. That
box. Okay.
And it's got wear, you know, a bit of fraying in places, but I cannot fault it.
Stick with it.
But I want to.
Well, sure, you always camp on your own, though.
Yeah, generally. It shows.
It's only a.
I don't.
It's only one person.
Yeah, yeah. So you can get yourself and like a rucksack and a few like bits and pieces in there, but it's, you wouldn't get two people and stuff in it. I mean, you barely get two people in it.
Yeah. So when you, if you were to be camping with your wife,
yeah,
your dog would have to be there. So you try and get your dog, would, Bentley, no. into a roof tent.
No, see, I've spoken about this with my wife.
Okay.
We would sleep in the roof tent. He would stay in the boot of the car. He'd be all right with that.
Oh, would he?
Yeah.
Okay.
With the window cracked. He'd be
yeah,
fine.
Yeah,
because he associates that with his, that's his space anyway, because he's got like a mat thing in there for where we'd take him for walks.
Okay.
I think he would be fine. There's no way he would get in and out of a roof tent.
So I put, yeah.
Be a great big lump of a dog.
Yeah.
It's
getting him in is okay. It's like even our Jack Russell, getting him in is okay. But it's when he wants to help get out and he almost, you go up the ladder to then lift him and he kind of does like a little jumping giraffe. So like, he's got a full thrust. Like, that jump, you idiot.
You know, him commitment.
He looks down and goes, I think I can do that.
He's brave.
Yeah, but he doesn't. He's sort of, I mean, he's 10 years old now.
The dream setup for me would be, and I've seen a couple of Freelander 2s built really nicely for camping. I would take the back seats out. I'd have storage boxes in the back. I'd keep the boot free so Bentley can go in there.
Yeah.
Maybe store a couple of little bits.
So have no back seats.
Have no back seats.
Just buy a Freelander 2 commercial.
Rare, though.
Do they do them?
Yeah.
They didn't do many. No.
And then roof rack, roof tent. Have the take the roof tent on and off as you need it. Use the rack for carrying dirty stuff, you know, like whatever. And that's pretty much it, really. Maybe that should be a project for next year. Spec Freelander 2.
Yeah, see, now I'm getting visions of like, you know, drive it to Muddy Mods.
Yeah.
Get those guys to trick it up a bit.
Yeah.
And just make it look a bit.
Every time I go there, and I've been there a few times and this year, I'm like, I could spend some money here. I could make my Freelander look wicked.
You could. I would start with your turbo.
Listen. So, you know, it hasn't got any louder in like 50,000 miles. I'm not going to change it needlessly until it launches its compressor wheel through the engine and then I'll think about it.
How are you getting on with the remap?
Good. Love it. Yeah. Really, really nice.
You've settled into driving.
Yeah, it almost, you know, when you get used to something, like when you had your TD5 done, I expect, and you sort of become used to the power, don't you?
Well, Gareth Empire, who did my remap on my TD5 back at LOM Live, he said, see how we get on, and I'll look forward to seeing you back here very soon.
He'll be back for a stage.
Why are you saying that? He said, everyone comes back. I said, why? I don't need more power. He goes, well, we'll see. Now I'm used to it.
Yeah.
Now I'm ready.
Yeah.
I can see why people want more, because I can accelerate up the road. I've noticed one thing, though. So this time of year, being colder weather.
Yeah.
I let it warm up a lot longer because it really does want to get going.
Okay.
He said, make sure you warm it up because the turbo's
warm. I've always been taught and I've always been pretty mechanically sympathetic when it comes to heating engines up and letting them cool down.
Yeah.
And that is especially important when you do, you know, put them under more strain to make more power like you do with the remap. To answer your question, because I'm used to the power now, but to me, it doesn't, like, the novelty of it is gone. But I can really appreciate how much better it is. It's almost like Land Rover should have tuned it to that from the factory.
Mm.
But yeah, you certainly, I mean, for Freelander 2s, you know, it's not a race car, but you can actually make decent progress up hills and you don't have to kick down. You just roll your foot on the throttle a bit more.
Yeah, you widen the torque.
Exactly. So nice. Yeah, really, really good. That's an Alive map that Muddy Mods are agents for. So yeah, if you've got a Freelander or an Evoque and you want it remapped, I'm going to put a piece in the next issue of the mag as well to talk a little bit more in depth about it. So check that out.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Talking of the mag, shall we have product of the week? Ready?
Yeah, I am ready because I've got no idea what you're about to say.
See how I seamlessly rolled into
it? You did. You're very good.
Right.
If we're getting professional at this.
You own a Defender, don't you?
I do.
have you got floppy speedo syndrome where the needle goes up and down at low speed? Don't answer that. I've got the fix for you.
I don't know. Do you know what? I don't know. I'm going to have to look. I don't think it's as bad.
No, yours won't. Yours is electronic, so I'll ask you the wrong question. Yours isn't cable driven like a lot of them are when they flop up and down the needle.
No, it did on my earlier one, but yeah. I don't think it does.
I misfired with that question. Yours should be fine. But anyway, the reason it's fine is because it's electronic, and now you can get an electronic speedo conversion for older Defenders sold by Exmoor Trim.
That's interesting. Okay.
So, literally reading it out of the magazine, owners of older Defenders may be used to the Palm Trina Hurricane display, sometimes experienced with the speedo, which is exactly what I said, like the needle goes between 0 and 20 until you get up to a reasonable speed, and then it...
It definitely does that on my project, or used to on my project one.
Before you took it to bits.
Yeah.
Using an electronic pickup rather than the traditional cable, which your TD5 will do, the speedo will be more accurate and is easy to calibrate by driving a measured mile. That means adjusting it to compensate for different gear ratios or tyre sizes is easy too. So if you've got big old tyres on your Defender... and you're sick of your speedo being rubbish, this will not only cure the rubbish speedo, but you can also dial it in for whatever size tyre you're running. So you're killing two birds with one stone.
That's interesting. Well, you do that on GPS or something, do you think?
You just program it on board.
Okay.
So it is £599.94 from exmoortrim.co.uk, and it's a proper VDO unit as well, so it's going to be good quality.
Good.
Because VDO did all the instruments for the TD5 back in the day, like the clock and the rev camera.
I recognise video.
Yeah. They also made the fuel pump. Anyway, there's your product of the week. Head to Exmoor Trim. And while you're at Exmoor Trim, take advantage of all the amazing deals they've got on at the moment, because they are going deal crazy. Have you seen their website?
I do go on their website now and again. I haven't been on it since some of their deals have been on there.
I keep trying to stay away from it because I'm constantly tempted by nicer seats. Anyway, feature of the week. Should we go for a feature of the week?
I think we should.
Are you excited? You don't sound very excited.
Do you know what? I'm not feeling excited about your feature of the week. I haven't even looked at it.
Oh, I won't bother then.
Yeah, go on then.
This week's feature of the week is all about Land Rover experience and how it came to be. This is another cracking feature by Gary Pusey in the classics section, and it's all about...
Gary's churning out some really good stuff at the minute.
I cannot praise Gary enough.
I don't even know if he listens to this.
You will not see... the content and the level of detail that you get in his pieces in any other magazine. You won't.
No,
guaranteed. It is flipping brilliant. And this feature is no exception. So, this is all about how Land Rover experience came about. And there's tons of fantastic vintage photos all the way through from Series 1, Series 2, early Discovery, Defender, of course, and things like L322 Range Rover, always a favourite of mine to drop into the podcast. And of course, yeah, it goes through all the history, the different sites, media side of it, and of course, talks a little bit about the Land Rover Experience centres that are open to this very day that you can go and experience, try out all the latest models. So yeah, well worth a look. That is in the winter edition of Land Rover Monthly. So be sure to check that out.
I need to read it myself.
Yes, indeed.
I've been around a couple of Land Rover... I've done loads of Land Rover experiences. I've done two or three.
Yeah, I've... Eastner. Been lucky enough to do Eastner a few times in various vehicles. Been around Rockingham as well. That's a good one.
I've done Rockingham.
A few years ago now, but that was good.
I've done the Solihull one.
Have you?
Their own one. Drove that in a Minerva. They had a Minerva.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never driven in a Minerva. Is it basically the same as a Series 1?
Very similar. Very similar. Didn't have a roof on it and it was raining, right? So the guy...
Great combo.
Yeah. The guy that sat next to me in the passenger seat held an umbrella over me. Are you dry?
Oh, that's so romantic.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I was media, you see. Yeah, they were looking after me.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, Minerva's really good round there.
Yeah, I bet it was. I must go back to an experience centre, actually, because they are like... proper. You know, sometimes when you go a certain thing and you just feel like almost at home, like the amount of Land Roveriness is just perfect, and you can tell everyone's there and they're loving it. That's exactly
what Land Rover Experience is like for me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Eastern's my favourite so far.
Eastern is so good.
Best off-roading they've ever done is the Eastern. I've said that before.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like I say, that's where we first met, wasn't it?
It was.
All those years ago. But yeah, even as
and
like...
you were the competitor magazine.
Yeah, we were.
It's a good day.
It was good. Good day. And I got a mug out of that as well, which I still used it yesterday.
Yeah, I've got the same mug.
Yeah, Mug Buddies.
Mug.
But yeah, if you... actually, we should probably add that on to the question from last week where that that nice chap from America said that him and his son like to go and do Land Rover-related stuff in the UK. And we pointed him at the JLR Classic Works site. Also, go to Eastner and do an experience there because you won't regret it. Is all
no, that is the finest off-roading in the
huge
UK.
As well, and so much to look at. There was a Defender Octa there last time I went, and I was like, ooh.
On the off-road course?
No, they just parked out the front, just left it out the front.
Yeah, but that's because their customers are turning up. Ooh.
Yeah, I expect it would be sowing the seed, isn't it?
Have they delivered any Octas yet?
I actually don't know. I've not seen any in the wild.
I haven't.
Anyway,
this has got an Octa. I would like to know.
Oh yeah, please let us know if you've got an Octa.
Tell us what you think.
Have a chat with you if you have got one. That would be cool. Because they are an amazing bit of kit. I know I said at the time they were a little bit understated for what they are, but actually, when you delve into the spec, they are.
Oh yeah, something else.
At the opposite end of the classic Land Rovers, we were banging on about at the beginning of the podcast, really.
Yeah.
But equally cool. And that's the great thing about Land Rovers, all encompassing, something for everyone.
There certainly is. Nothing to choose from.
There certainly is. Right. Should we wrap it up for this week?
I think we should. And we'll catch you same time next week.
See you then.
Bye for now.